On Point is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Fortune magazine is out with its annual list of the 100 best American companies to work for. If you don't work for them, read it and weep. A few of the perks for the toiling masses at number one ranked Google: free gourmet food all the time, all over the company campus. At work at Google, you can do your laundry, drop off your dry cleaning, have your car washed, work out in the gym, get a massage, study Mandarin, Japanese, Spanish, French, ask a personal concierge to arrange dinner reservations, check in with 5 on-site doctors, hit the lap pool, take a free ski trip, and of course, there's foosball. Up next on Point, America's best employers and what really matters at work now. Joining me first today from New York is Lee Clifford, assistant managing editor at Fortune magazine, and on the team behind Fortune's current cover story, The 100 Best Companies to Work For. You can go to our website, onpointradio.org, to see the full list of the top 100 companies. Lee Clifford, thanks very much for being with us today.
Great to be here.
Lots of companies out there. How on earth do you decide who are the 100 best to work for?
Well, you know, it's funny. It's actually the employees that work at the companies that end up deciding. What we do is we send a company needs to apply to be on this list, and they agree to let us anonymously survey at least 400 of their employees. So we really want to get the real story of what's going on at these companies, which is hard to do just through the PR department.
And does everybody put their hands up? Companies want to be considered for this list? Presumably it helps them recruit.
It really does. It's a great recruiting tool. And it's funny, you know, tons of companies apply to be on this list, but some companies decide not to because they're just not comfortable opening up their employees for anonymous surveys. I think they're afraid of what their employees might say of them.
So I'm looking here, SC Johnson in Racine, Wisconsin, Boston Consulting Group, Griffin Hospital in Derby, Connecticut, Edward Jones in St. Louis, and right on down. What kind of questions do you ask of these 400, that's a pretty big number, 400 employees inside the company to get a sense of how good a place it is to work?
We ask them everything. We ask them how do their bosses treat them? What are the company meetings like? What is the feeling around the hallways? You know, a lot of companies will tout benefits programs, but they're maybe only available to a very select group of people. So we say, you know, do you take advantage of, what programs do you take advantage of? How do people work together? We just ask them everything you can possibly imagine about these workplaces.
So we've got Nike in Seattle, Robert W. Baird in Milwaukee, Genzyme in Cambridge, Massachusetts, Goldman Sachs in New York. No, duh. a lot of money there, at least. How big a part of this is compensation? I see you show average annual pay, and the interesting thing to me was it's all over the place. You've got Adobe Systems in San Jose, California, average annual pay. They rank 31 on your list, $161,000 average pay. On the other hand, you've got other companies, you know, very modest. JM Family Enterprises, Deerfield Beach, Florida, $36,000 annual pay, and yet they're 41 on your list. It's not just money, obviously.
It is not just money, and that's actually something that's, I think, continuing to change about what people value about their workplaces. Obviously, salary is important, but what we're finding is that it's getting a little bit less important, that benefits and culture are kind of getting more and more important to people. But the salary question, what we do is we ask companies for the average salary for the largest number of employees. So, you know, for example, at a grocery store chain, it could be that the pharmacists are the largest employee group, and so the salary might be a little bit higher than you'd think it would be at a grocery store.
So in that way, it's kind of a median number.
Exactly. So, I mean, there are a lot of New York companies on the list, and the salaries there do tend to be higher. And you can imagine that, you know, probably you're paid pretty well in New York, but you're not going to have the rock climbing gym and the track and the outdoor pool like you might have if you work at Nike, which is out in Oregon and has a lot of space to work with.
I should have said Beaverton, Oregon there for Nike. And, of course, the big splash over the whole list this year, tons of photographs of grinning, giggling, rock climbing, you name it, people are all at Google. Take us into the Google juggernaut as number one best employer in America, by your reckoning anyway. What put this company there? What didn't, I should say?
Well,
they got everything
going. To apply to our list, you have to be at least 7 years old and have 1,000 employees. So this is actually the first year Google was eligible to apply for this list. And they really just blew everyone else away. I mean, you look at these pictures of these employees, and they look like we hired models to look this happy, because you think, can employees really look that happy?
Get real.
But they are, in fact, really Google employees. And, you know, the list of perks there is just staggering. You know, starting from everyone at Google talks about the food. They have 11 free gourmet cafeterias there.
Free gourmet all the time. Yeah, yeah. And food's just the beginning. I mean, you've got this. If you work for Google and you have a baby, you get a $500 voucher for takeout food after the baby's born. Buy a hybrid car, a $5,000 subsidy for the car. On-site car washes, on-site oil changes, washers and dryers, free detergent, TGIF parties, free ski trips. I mean, it's just kind of if you refer a new hire, $2,000 in your pocket at Google.
Well, they take hiring very seriously, and they're getting about 1,300 resumes a day now. So it's obviously pretty hard to sort through all those and find good people. So I think they really do rely on the network of people who already work at Google to bring in their very talented friends and family members.
Well, 1,300 resumes a day, and you've got another number here. They have 6,500 employees, Google. 1,145,000 job applicants. Is that in a single year?
Globally, I mean, it's just overwhelming how many resumes they're getting. They've actually brought in a lot of new HR people. It's kind of interesting, not people from the tech world, but they hired a guy from GE who's overseeing their HR now, and he's, you know, really looking for creative ways to try and find the best and brightest people. But it's overwhelming when you have so much interest in the
lap pool, cheap massages. Never mind having a baby in the takeout, if you're breastfeeding and not only just the lactation room, you don't even have to haul your own breast pump. They'll loan you one so the new moms don't have to haul them around. What is Google up to with this? And is this only because of this over the moon? What is their stock price now? $485 a share or something like this? Is this realistic, or is this the sort of foosball fantasy world of late 90s internet companies?
Well, it's interesting. That was one of the questions we set out to answer. You know, obviously when the wind is at your back and you're raking in money, it's easy to offer a lot of these perks. But what we found was the founders have really been, this is not a new phenomenon. You know, Google's only been public for a couple of years, but we found that, you know, when they were a very young company and it just started out, one of the founders, at the time they had two employees with children. So this is way back when. One of the founders went to the person who was running HR at the time and said, you know, can we turn that conference room in the corner there into a daycare center? And the HR person kind of looked at them and said, but there are only two kids here. And he said, you know, I know there are only two kids, but I think it would be nice to have some on-site daycare. So clearly from the very beginning they were thinking about how to make life easier for their employees. So it really is built into the culture there. And, you know, obviously, as the stock has done well, it's allowed them to hire a lot more people, hire smart people, but it's something that they've valued all along.
It's a great stock price they're floating on there. It's not just perks. It's the way work gets done, not just at Google, but right on down this list of 100. And we'll look at that. Lee Clifford with Fortune, we're so glad to have you with us. Let me bring another voice into this conversation, if I may, from Los Angeles. We're delighted to be joined by Edward Lawler. He's director at the Center for Effective Organizations at the University of Southern California's Marshall School of Business. He's a professor of business there. One of the top gurus in the field of management, says Business Week and everybody else. His most recent book is The New American Workplace. Edward Lawler, thank you very much for being with us today.
You're welcome. Good day.
What do you make of Fortune's big list here and the companies coming out on top? Is this as it ever was, or is there a new stripe of company, a new stripe of perks that's getting the top, you know, positions these days?
Well, it's an interesting list of certainly of perks and also of companies, very diverse in terms of industry and geography. Google reminds me of a 1990s dot-com on steroids. They've taken that model and gone over the top with it. It's working for them. The key issue, of course, is what caused what. The success of the company allows them to do this, or because they do this, they're a successful company. Difficult to sort it out. They tend to be interrelated together. It's what we call a virtuous spiral. Better performance lets them attract better people, lets them treat them better, lets them attract better people, which leads to better performance. And we've certainly seen companies on that kind of spiral before, and it can continue for a long time. In the airline industry, for example, Southwest has had that kind of virtuous spiral for quite a while.
And not just at Google. I'm looking here, CNN Money saying they looked at the Fortune's 100 best companies over time, and they outperformed the S&P 500 a total return of 18.1% in the last 3 years from those top-ranking companies, compared to 10.5% for the S&P. So what does that say, Edward Lawler? Does it solve whether, you know, which comes first, treating your employees well or making money?
No, I don't think it really answers that question. I think what all this represents, though, is that increasingly the major companies in the U.S. depend on human capital for their competitive advantage. So companies are more and more looking at how to treat their human capital, their people, in ways that are most productive and produce the best bottom line results. And they're finding that certainly providing some extra perks, a particular work relationship, developing a strong brand as an employer can be a way to attract people, which ultimately give them a competitive advantage in the marketplace, which then leads to good performance and allows this kind of virtuous spiral relationship to develop.
Lee, is it the sort of jazzy perks, the gourmet food that really bumps the company up there, or are we looking at more work-related, profound in the grain of work structures at companies that make happy employees?
Well, it's interesting. If you talk to Google employees, they do rave about the food, but then they always say, you know, no, it's the fact that my colleagues are so smart. They make me smarter. I enjoy being challenged by them. And so I think the perks kind of, they do affect your day-to-day experience at the company, but it's definitely not the reason that people stay at Google. They stay there because they love their colleagues.
And right now, from the Wall Street Journal, we're joined by Sue Schellenberger, writes the Wall Street Journal's terrific column, Work and Family There, former chief of the journal's Chicago Bureau, author of The Breaking Point, How Female Midlife Crisis is Transforming Today's Women. Sue Schellenberger, thanks so much for joining us.
It's great to be with you, Tom. Thank you.
So here I'm looking, on the one hand, at all these giddy, grinning Google employees and this list of 100 best places, lots of photographs of happy, smiling people. Then I read the first paragraph of your January 11th column, and it starts like this. The national mood on work-life issues is among the grimmest I've seen in 15 years writing this column. So how do we square these, Sue?
Well, I think these employers are truly remarkable, Tom. I think, you know, I mean, there's a risk here. It's going to be so great to go to work that you don't want to go home and take care of the family. But I think, you know, they do set themselves forth as finding really creative ways to get around the long hours problems, the intensity of work, the stress that we're seeing. These companies have been really clever and creative in figuring out how to get the most out of their employees while still having enough empathy and respect for them that they really want to come to work and indeed enjoy working there. And I think Google, of course, is a great example. I mean, they even give their workers some extra time each week just to be creative and think up new ideas. Now, that could be really fun.
They're supposed to devote 20% of their time to projects they dream up that might help the company. And we're told, Fortune writes, that's resulted in Google News, Gmail, Google Finance, all from that 20%. But what about this grim national mood on work-life issues? If it's that grim, can life at the office really be that good, Sue?
I think if you looked inside any one of these companies, you'd find people working longer hours, feeling the intensity of a competition these days. And I think, indeed, the national mood is that, you know, my work-life balance is just not good enough right now. That's partly because our expectations are rising, partly because lists like these have set forth the way it can be, and we all aspire to a better work-life balance. Another factor, though, too, is clearly there's great pressure on labor costs, great pressure on productivity. Workers are having to work longer, harder, and more intensely at the average company and the below-average company. And we have to remember the hundreds of thousands of employers out there who are not on this list and haven't figured out ways to offset those pressures. So I think it makes the list especially important.
Lee Clifford, we've talked a lot about Google. What about some other companies and the things they're doing, companies who have made the top 100 list you've put together, the things they're doing to keep their employees happy at work?
Well, you know, it's interesting. The whole work-life balance issue is such a huge issue right now. And one of my favorite things from this list is Deloitte and Touche, which is number 76 on our list.
Right.
They started a new program this year, and we actually featured a woman who is taking advantage of it, where you can take a 5-year sabbatical.
When you have a baby or just any time?
Well, it's mostly designed to capture those women who are leaving, you know, because they've had one child or their second baby. But they were just finding that they were having such a tough time keeping these women in the workforce. And we talked to this woman who had moved up to New Hampshire. She had been an auditor with them. And
5 years. What's the idea there, that they're acknowledging it takes a while to get the new family started, go off and do it, and when you're done with all that, come back? How do they know that the woman hasn't, or the employee hasn't kind of lost her edge?
Well,
why should she? But she could.
They pay to keep all her licenses up to date, and they also pay for her to undergo training during those 5 years to make sure that her skills stay current. So it's kind of a win-win.
If you can make it work, I'm looking on down your list. Arnold and Porter, number 26. Know any whiz kids? This law firm offers referral fees of $15,000 if you recommend an employee that it ends up hiring. Not too bad. Goldman Sachs, of course, famously high-paying, but employers who marry or register a domestic partnership there get an extra week of vacation. Microsoft, free grocery delivery, valet parking, dollar-for-dollar match for employee charitable contributions up to $12,000.
It's interesting, the Microsoft thing, I think that's probably a direct result of having to compete for talent with places like Google, because they've been on our list for several years, but every year they keep adding more and more perks, and I think that's just, they're trying to compete for those top employees.
It ratchets up here. Edward Lawler, how do you look at the sort of sparkly baubles that are offered here? Is that what really draws people into a company, or is it the working conditions and the culture beneath the baubles? How do you see it?
Well, it's an important question, certainly, and I would argue that the evidence shows that it is more the fundamentals that draw, attract, and retain people. What the baubles often do is get publicity, like in Fortune magazine, and certainly gets people's attention, and that may lead to a bigger applicant pool. I suspect once they get there, it's not something that necessarily retains them. Then it comes down to the more tangible rewards or the more financially valuable rewards, the work itself, and certainly the social relationships and personal relationships that people develop at work are the key things that retain them. Some of the things you mentioned, though, I think Sue mentioned it also, are very important because they give people more free time or more time to spend somewhere. Mm-hmm. They may spend it at work or they may spend it on their personal life, but at least it takes some of the mundane things that we all do and makes them easier to do, whether it's an oil change at work or a shopping or take-home food, et cetera. It is the kind of thing that people with busy lives appreciate and can help them have both more time at work to do productive things or more time for their personal life.
Get the work done, get it done well, and still and not have that cluttered list of errands at the weekend. What a joy that would be. Lee, Edward Lawler, Sue Schellenberger, we've got a lot of listeners who want to join this conversation. I want to begin turning to them. Pauline is calling from Amherst, New York. Hi, Pauline. You're on the air.
Hi. I want to speak in favor of Wegmans supermarkets that have been on the list for several years now.
Yeah, way up there. Number three on Fortune's list this
fantastic,
year.
Fantastic. Because I speak not as an employee of the supermarket, but, of course, as a customer. I moved recently into Western New York where Wegmans started. It started in Rochester. And the
71 stores in 5 states, I'm reading here, private grocery chain. Can you feel happy employees when you shop there, Pauline?
Absolutely. Not only are they happy, they seem to be well-trained, very helpful. They take you to the aisle where the item is you're looking for, and they're very knowledgeable. They have chefs on hand to answer cooking questions. It's a fantastic store to shop in. But the one thing I want to praise more than anything else about Wegmans is that they offer scholarships to their part-time employees. And unlike so many fast food chains who promise kids that you too can be a manager of a franchise someday if you stick with us, they don't. Wegmans does not enforce such illusions. They try to encourage their kids. There is life beyond being a supermarket.
Right,
clerk.
So here's a scholarship, and you go for it. Pauline, stick with us for a second. Lee Clifford, here it is at number three, a supermarket chain, essentially. You would think that would be a tough business from which to come off as one of the top employers in America. I mean, how sexy can you make stocking shelves? On the other hand, there it is, and you hear Pauline saying it deserves it. What do you make of the Wegmans ranking here?
Well, it's really interesting to say that the whole career in a supermarket thing, because half of Wegmans managers actually started working there as teenagers.
Wow.
So, they really have made it a career for a lot of kids. And Wegmans is a really interesting company because it's a family business and it's still run by the family. And they have this real, camaraderie there. Everyone wears a badge saying, with their years of service at the company. And I think Pauline is right. They really make part-timers feel like part of this family.
And for that matter, two of the top five. You've got Google and Genentech and the Container Store, but then Wegmans and Whole Foods Market, both in that top five. There's another, Moving Food, Lee, and making the top of the pie when it comes to being a great employer.
Absolutely. And, you know, Whole Foods, obviously, a lot of us probably shop there. It's a great place to shop. But I think also they do a good job of making their employees feel like they're part of a larger mission, you know, bringing healthy food, organic food to customers. And there's another company where the leadership is really an interesting story. The CEO, John McKay, went this year, gave up his entire salary and said, you know what, I have enough money, and I'm going to focus on running the company, and I don't need to be paid anymore.
Working for just a dollar this year, and for a while they've had this policy that the top executives there would not make so much more than ordinary employees, 19 times the average full-time pay recently. I mean, look around the country. Whoa, that is not the norm. Pauline, thanks for your call. Let me get one from Boston. Hi, Carl, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I'd like to just share what it's like at the other end of the food chain and employment.
Okay.
I used to work for a company that was in the top 100 for quite some time, which is Delta Airlines.
Yeah.
And as you know, the airline industry has had its trouble, and now I think if the survey was taken in reverse, we might win the award for the worst places to work.
What happened? What's the evidence, Carl?
Well, you know, you have a demoralized workforce. As you know, the pensions have gone, the pay's been cut. It's a struggle to, you know, you each time you go to work, you say, today's the day, I'm not going to be negative. I'm going to put on my happy face and see if I can't get through the day. And, you know, when you're surrounded by a lot of negativity, it wears on you. It's a struggle to have it so good and then have it reversed on you.
So, but do people leave when it's no longer fun that way, or do people feel trapped there?
Well, I think it depends on the work group. There's, you know, the portable people that have transferable skills have obviously left in droves. And then there's other groups of employees that aren't as portable, and they're pretty much trapped.
Yeah, and there we go. Gee, Carl, we wish you the best with that. Not so fun to be on the other end of these lists. Sue Schellenberger, what about your sense of, I mean, as Americans listen to a show like this or read Fortune here, you know, where's the weight of worker sense of their workplace these days? In the giddy, happy folks who are feeling, you know, it's getting better and better? Or are you hearing from more who say it's not fun?
I'm hearing from many who are saying it's not fun. And I think the productivity pressures and the extending workday are affecting a great many people. However, as Lee said, the tightening labor market is family's best friend, and workers who have skilled up and really gotten ready to compete for the best jobs are benefiting from that. Employers are having to offer better benefits, as we're seeing on this list, which is reflects a broad ratcheting up of the quality of certain workplaces where they're really having to compete hard. So I think the message here is that it's far more important than it has been in the past to skill up, fill up your portfolio, compete hard for the best jobs, and you too may work at Google.
You've written that this might be the year, American employee, to ask for more flexibility in your relationship with your job. Why?
I think that employers are having to give more flexibility for a couple of reasons. The tightening labor market is forcing them to compete hard for the best workers. And second, it's much easier to do that than it was in the past. You know, we have mobile office technology. We have automated scheduling systems that enable even hourly workers to have more flexibility. So I think that we're seeing a broad change in the workplace right now toward greater flexibility. And as with all changes on the job, it's best to get on the cutting edge instead of the trailing behind.
Yeah, for sure. Let's take a call from Big Piney, Wyoming. And Rich, hi, Rich. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I work for a company called National Oil Well Varco. I don't know if it's on your list or not, but it is a great company to work for.
I don't see it just offhand. National Oil Well Varco. Is it an oil drilling company, or what is it, Rich?
We sell parts to the oil field.
Okay, and you're saying thumbs up for your company? Why?
Because it's not we're not all numbers, you know, and most big companies, we have 7,700 employees, and most big companies, you're a number and not a name, and even the president of the company knows my name. I've only been working here for a year and a half, and they call and email me all the time, even from the top. So
you feel a kind of embrace. You're not just a number, but what about the numbers when it comes to profit? Is that what it's all about, delivering your number in that way, Rich?
Kind of, but you know, we're a growing company. We're growing very fast, and they appreciate that, and they show us with bonuses and, you know, and other little perks. We got vacations and personal days, and we don't have free food or anything, but not usually, sometimes, but we don't have cafeterias or anything, but it's just a wonderful company to work for. I love the people I work with, and I love my bosses.
Hey, big thumbs up for National Oil Well Varco, Rich in Big Piney, Wyoming. Thanks for calling. Professor Lawler, your book is The New American Workplace. What are, if it's new, what are the major characteristics of this new workplace that make people either more or less satisfied?
Well, it's a good question. In fact, a lot of the points we've covered already relate to what we found in the book and our study, which was really a 30-year look at how the American workplace has changed. Work does tend to be more interesting, more challenging today. People do have more choices, more options with respect to when they work, how they work.
Mm-hmm.
And it shows up somewhat in the satisfaction of employees. American workers today are actually overall more satisfied than they were 30 years ago, 20 years ago, and 10 years ago. That's combined with, as Sue said, more feeling of performance pressure, more demands to perform, brought on by new technologies, 24/7 workdays, fear that their job will be global offshored in a global economy. So it is a much more complex workplace today, much more challenging one. And the companies that are able to combine the technology, the relationship with people, to how they face customers and the kind of products they produce are turning out to be big winners. But we also have a whole bunch of losers, like the Delta Airlines and other airlines of the world, that all they might have had happy workers didn't have productive workers with costs under control that would allow them to be competitive in this new economy.
So when you say more satisfied but less security, more risk, how do those two fit together? Are American employees learning to love risk, be more satisfied in spite of it, or are those at odds?
They're not necessarily at odds, although certainly for some people, the insecurity and the risk that are present are a significant issue with respect to their being satisfied. But along with those risks do go more choices. Interestingly enough, the group, when we looked at demographically, that has improved most in satisfaction are women, because they, over the last 30 years, have gained really more than any other demographic group with respect to income, job opportunities, educational experiences that are relevant for work. Business schools are increasingly becoming at least 50-50 male-female, big change. Hmm. So when we look at their satisfaction and also their income and also the kind of jobs they're in, they've improved tremendously. That's not to say they've reached parity by any means. But
they're pushing your overall satisfaction numbers up because it's,
yes,
whatever it is, it's better than it was. That's
it
an
was,
interesting
yeah.
dynamic. Let's take a call from Atlanta, Georgia. And John, hi, John, you're on the air.
Hey. Since you were talking about Google, that just reminded me a lot of the university and sort of college experience. And I think a lot of the success of companies that I think a lot of the success of the high-tech and science companies comes from that sort of academic and university model where you take a bunch of bright people, you stick them on a pretty campus, give them a decent meal plan, and, you know, they're not really used to leaving anyway. You just kind of create that environment.
So they want to sit right there. Fortune writes that the Google campus, as they call it, still feels like the brainiest university imaginable.
Exactly. I think, you know, a lot of these high-tech companies, especially on the West Coast, were founded by, you know, kids in flip-flops and jeans. And basically, you know, you're studying in the dorm all night, you're hanging around a bunch of bright people, both your colleagues and your professors, and I think that's a lot more conducive to getting the best out of people than sort of the old kind of Rockefeller, Andrew Carnegie model where you have some big kind of, you know, huffing and puffing, you know, big exec over your shoulder telling you what to do all the time and kind of, you know, just making that huge...
Sure.
That big monkey on your back, I think.
So for many people, that's going to be a very appealing environment. But Lee Clifford, the question that stands there is, does that float on realism? You know, if Google stock price, you know, I don't know, chunks down by a third someday, do the gourmet meals go away?
Well, you know, that's a good question. And certainly there have been a lot of dot-com companies that we all saw flame out, and suddenly those perks were gone. I think the Google founders are fairly committed to a lot of these things, so I don't think they're just things that are going to go away as soon as the stock takes a dive. And the founders are realistic about the fact that, yeah, they're probably going to hit a wall at some point, and, you know, that'll make it harder to compete for talent. But it's interesting about the university environment. They definitely modeled it after their days, you know, at Stanford. And Sergey Brin told us that even if they had more space, they would not put people in their own offices. They really like having people together so they can interact. And, you know, you see people in cubicles. You don't see people holed away in their offices. So that's a really good point.
Let me go to Mountain View, California, and Google. Judy Gilbert is staffing programs director there. She's on the line. So here you are, top of the pops on the Fortune list. I guess when your stock price is 480 plus, you can do that. Is there any end to the perks that Google's ready to offer to the right employee?
You know, we think about the perks as a smart way to invest in keeping our people happy. We go through a lot of effort to find the right people to bring into the company who are going to contribute to the product, they're going to contribute to the culture, and continue to make it a great place to work. And we like to invest intelligently in the kinds of things that are going to make it easier for people to come to work, get their work done, and frankly enjoy being here.
And when you look across this whole plethora of perks that you offer at Google, what seems to matter most to people? I mean, you know, does the on-site car wash, is that the thing that really does it? Or is it, you know, the lecture series or the doctors on-site? How do you prioritize the perks as to what's most important?
You know, different things matter to different people, and we have a really diverse employee population, and so if you went around and asked folks what was the most important thing that they were going to, what was the most important thing on the perks, you'd get different answers depending on where people are in their life cycle. So people love the meals, yes. They love the on-site car wash. Having a doctor here is really convenient. But at the end of the day, the most important thing is the quality of the work that we get to do and the fun of solving really tough problems in the company of people that you really enjoy being around.
Do you track the number of hours that employees stay there to figure out if all these blandishments and perks are keeping them at the job at the grindstone longer?
You know, it's not really so much about keeping them at the job and keeping them at the grindstone. It's more about helping people to be productive, whether they choose to be here at the office or whether they get their best thinking done out on a mountain bike somewhere.
What's the Google employee attitude, if you can characterize it, Judy, toward the rest of us poor schlubs? When you look, I mean, a million plus applying for jobs there last year, you've just got 6,500 employees sitting on this mountain of perks. Does it end up making your employees, I don't know, afraid of the rest of the country where it might not be so cushy?
I don't think so. I think, you know, we look at folks outside the company. We look at them as users, and our mission is to help make the world's information accessible and useful to as many of the users as possible. And so that's how we like to look at it.
Sue Schellenberger with The Wall Street Journal. We've got Google right here. What's your question as work-life guru, work and family guru for the Googlemeister?
I wonder, my hunch is that people are pretty happy with work-life balance there, not so much because of hours issues, but because of the relationships, as Dr. Lawler was talking about, that they have there at work. Everybody from Sergey on down respects them and their personal and family lives. How would you describe the hours people work, and are they satisfied?
You know, I think the hours that people work, it really varies a lot. I know there was some discussion about how it's like college. In some ways, I think it is. So there are times when, yes, people stay up and pull all-nighters because that's what needs to get done to get the job done. There are times when there is a lot more balance. But I think the company tries to encourage managers to give people tremendous flexibility and put trust in people to know what the job is and to do what it takes to get it done. And so there's not a lot of micromanagement. There's not a lot of tracking to see who's at their desk at what kind of time.
And off goes Google. Wow, right at the top of the list. Judy Gilbert, Staffing Programs Director there in Mountain View, California. Thanks a lot for calling in.
Thank you very much for having me.
Let's take a call from Orangeburg, South Carolina. And T, hi, T, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call, Tom.
Yeah, yeah.
I work for Verizon Wireless, and Verizon, I don't know if they're on your list or not, but I know we were voted best workplace for moms. And
nationally, or they're in Orangeburg, T?
Nationally, and I actually don't work in Orangeburg. I work in Columbia, South Carolina. I just happen to live in Orangeburg.
Got it.
What I wanted to say, though, is that Verizon Wireless is like one of the best companies to work for simply because of the flexibility. Now, we do have quite a bit of flexibility and options that are afforded to us for, you know, in terms of the times we want to work and things of that nature. There's a whole system that they've worked out for us so that we can opt for whatever times are more feasible. And if we get a schedule that we don't like, then we can swap with someone who also has a schedule that we don't, that they don't like.
T, you're 28 years old. Are you a mother yet?
No, not yet.
So has the Verizon policy made you less, less afraid of crossing that bridge when you come to it?
It has, in fact, made me less afraid for the simple reason that they also help with daycare. We get discounts on certain daycare centers. We get extremely great benefits for, you know, having kids and having children. You know, we have a joke in our work environment where we say we each have $5 or $10 babies because you pay the copay for the first visit and then you really don't pay for anything else.
Right, that's a good phrase. T, we got a rough line there, which I'm sorry for our Verizon employee, but it's great to have you call. Let me get one more from Beaufort, South Carolina. Dave, you're on the air.
Hey, Tom. A lot of what I've been hearing is gets down to the what I call the three P's of a successful job.
Okay.
And that's people, pay, and power. I like all the people I work with. My boss is a great guy. I get paid enough to do my life, and then they empower me to do my job, and it helps me to be a good person myself. So I feel like I'm able to have the creativity to do my job.
We like the three P's. That sounds good. What do you do with those P's, Dave?
I'm a trucker right now with U.S. Express, and it's a really great company to work for. And I was wondering to ask Lee if she ever did a rating of trucking companies that would help all us drivers out here to know which ones to pick.
Lee Clifford, how about it? I didn't notice trucking companies on your list of 100. What do you say, Lee?
You know, there isn't one on our list right now, but tell your employers to apply. We don't know if they're applying for the list, so make sure they are.
Dave, let me ask you. You're a trucker, which means you spend a lot of time alone, and yet people is right up at the top of your priorities for a good employer, but you got a lot of solitary time. So how does people come in, the people factor, when you're in trucking?
That's a good question. Our immediate boss is our dispatch office, and there's three people in there, and they can either make life real rough for you or be real good, and they're just excellent.
The way they're on the radio with you, the cell phone these days, the way they're scheduling you, that kind of thing?
That kind of thing, yeah, and real flexible with what your reasonable requests are for time off and things like that, and getting you good loads and all that. So yeah, it's very small, very small contact with people, but the ones that you do have contact with are real important.
Dave, we appreciate your wisdom from the road there, and good luck with it. Thanks for calling.
Thanks.
Let me get one more from Auburn, Massachusetts. Ryan is on the air. Hi, Ryan.
Hey, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah. What do you know?
I wanted to put kind of a small business perspective onto this. There's been a lot of talk about, these big multinational companies, but I work for a small data storage reseller out of Auburn, Mass., 7 people in our company.
That's small.
And by far the best job I've ever had in terms of benefits, flex time. I do one day a week from home, and, there's definitely some pressure to produce and to generate revenue. But pre-tax health benefits, pre-tax daycare, flex spending accounts.
Ryan, how does a 7-person company manage to pull all that off? You must have good margins there to be doing good business.
Well, yeah, we've definitely, we work towards getting those good margins. But, because we're a sales-focused organization, any revenue that's brought in is directly offset by an individual salary. So, by being a revenue-producing member of the company, I'm enabling our company to be able to take advantage of these kind of benefits.
Do you feel less job security in a 7-person firm than in bigger firms you worked for?
Certainly not. There's a lot more personality involved in it. And, I have a very good relationship with the two guys that I work for. As long as everything continues to go well in terms of the sales-focused side of things, I feel very confident that my job's going to be around.
That's great. 7 people and going strong. Ryan, thanks for calling. Let me go to Ed in Queensbury, New York. Hi, Ed. You're on the air.
Hi. Hello. How are you doing?
We're pretty good. What do you see out there, Ed?
Well, one of your panelists was mentioning about the gap between the CEO and the average worker's salary, the multiple salaries. Along the same lines, as you hear about either boards or the CEOs themselves voting themselves either several millions or even hundreds of millions of dollars in bonuses and other perks. And not only does that demoralize the employee at the floor level, was to look at these people making a huge amount of money compared to the, you know, your average wage slave. But then these people are also saying, so this is why we're cutting costs. This is why we're working so hard to make our company lean,
right,
to make these people wealthy, the top of the line.
Ed, you raise a great issue. Let me go to Lee Clifford at Fortune with it. Lee, do you correlate here, or do you track this? Is there a correlation between the pay of CEOs and those with really high multiples, and there are a lot of them now, and employee satisfaction when it's flatter? Are employees happier, as Ed suggests they might be? Does it matter?
You know, all the evidence is anecdotal, but we do see this in the employee surveys. It does turn up that employees say, you know, I really admire the fact that either, you know, we do have a salary cap, so I know that our CEO is not making a huge amount more than I am. And, you know, it just turns up so much how much employees look to the CEOs. And, you know, I know you had one caller on who was saying, our CEO knows my name, and that's really important.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just amazing how many times that comes up that people say, you know, I really appreciate the fact that they have lunches once a month where I get to go ask the CEO questions, or, you know, we have company meetings where he or she shows up and, you know, makes us feel like part of the team.
Yep. So. And Lawler, what about that CEO pay factor? If it's 100 times the average employees or 10, does it make a difference?
I think it does. It's also one of the areas of biggest change over the last 20 or 30 years. 20, 30 years ago, the ratio from top to bottom in the larger companies was somewhere around 30 just so to 1, maybe 60 to 1 at the extreme. Today, the average is more like 500 to 1 top to bottom. That undermines, I think, the credibility of the CEO when he or she asks for extra effort, tries to rally the employees around a cause or a mission, because it looks like it's so self-interest driven that often it's disregarded or pushed aside by an employee.
Lee, I wish Fortune would include that ratio next year in its list. That would be fascinating to track. Let me get one more call here from Fred in Newton, Massachusetts. Hi, Fred. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Hi. I have a quick complaint to the list makers here.
Okay.
Of these companies. I love to read those lists. But I worked for a local company for 25 years, Digital Equipment Corporation.
Sure.
1985, we were the heroes on those lists. As one caller, earlier caller, we had one of the best women employee policies going.
And then?
6-7 years later, we were laying off people, and 10 years ago, about a year after I retired, the company was broken up and sold.
Mm-hmm.
IBM was similar, although they recovered. They were 430,000 people and on the top of everybody's list in 1985. 1992, they had laid off. They were down to 280,000 people. If it hadn't been for Lou Gerstner coming in with his team, that company would no longer exist. Can the list makers kind of weigh and look ahead? Maybe the length of time on the list should be a
weighting factor. Can we predict the future?
Yeah, it is a great little history lesson, though. Lee, first to you, what about it? Do you have a responsibility to look beyond the perks to the prospects?
Well, you know, all we can do, this is a snapshot, so obviously we are asking employees about their workplace at the moment. It does turn up, you know, warning signs, people saying, well, you know, this or that is changing and I'm sensing a mood, but obviously we can't predict the future. We can't, you know, that's not something, I wish we could.
Sue Schellenbarger, you've got a lot of experience here. Top of list, watch out. Do you see that kind of fortune cookie message here?
The companies I really value on these lists, which are terrific, are the ones that have endured ups and downs in the business cycle. Ernst & Young, Wegmans, there's plenty of companies on here who have really been around the corner 3 or 4 times and have managed to keep good workplaces throughout all that, and I think those are the ones to really watch.
Yep, Wegmans since, 1916, that's a long stretch. Ed Lawler, where do you see the trend line here? Things getting better or worse for Americans at work, or splitting into tiers?
Well, I'm optimistic with an important footnote, and that is global competition is going to get greater. We certainly cannot become overly focused on non-productive perks and additions to the workplace. So each company has to keep its eye on whether it's got a high-performance workplace, not just a high-satisfaction workplace.
So,
and that can get lost in the competition, in essence, to be viewed as a trendy employer.
Mm. Well, gather your perks while you may. We'll see what the future holds. Edward Lawler at the University of Southern California, author of The New American Workplace. Wonderful to have you this hour. Thanks for joining us.
You're welcome.
And Sue Schellenbarger at the Wall Street Journal with the Work and Family column there. Sue, thanks for being here.
It's a pleasure, Tom.
Lee Clifford at Fortune, thanks for the list and thanks for your time.
Great to be here.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.